Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. Tonight, our speaker, Emily Leibla, will introduce us to the concept of drawdown. Drawdown is that point in time when the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere begins to decline on a year-to-year basis. Emily works for 350 KC to create a surge of action to address climate change. The great thing about the drawdown concept created by environmentalist Paul Hawken is that it models the outcome of actions that individuals can take or may already be taking to impact climate change. To me, it is refreshing to hear someone discuss climate change mitigation from a can-do perspective, since so much of the narrative involves doom and gloom or shame to try to entice people to change. This is a positive and hopeful message. This show was recorded on January 27th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show begins with the speaker's presentation, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. My name is Craig Volland. I'm a member of the forum committee. The forum exists to afford a platform for the discussion of significant issues, especially those which involve ethical values in the contemporary world. And we certainly have a very significant issue to talk about today, and a person highly qualified to do so. Emily Leibla. I first met Emily over 20 years ago, and she was, even at that time, she was very involved in environmental issues and improving the environment and also animal welfare issues. And she's been doing that ever since, and so it's completely, she's highly qualified to be talking about global warming when she's not working hard to improve the environment and other things. She works as a speech therapist, so she's also, and for children, so she's also working to improve the human condition as well. So without further ado, I'll give you Emily Leibla.
Thanks for having me here today. I'm very happy to be here with you to talk about Project Drawdown. As Craig mentioned, I've been involved in a variety of work for a number of years now. Just a little bit more about me. I am with 350 KC, a local organization dedicated to addressing global warming. I'm also the director of educational programming for the Climate Council of Greater Kansas City. And this is a relatively new organization that we've started. And our mission is to educate, partner, and advocate for solutions that reverse global warming. And we're excited about the opportunity to hopefully create more cohesiveness and expand the climate-related work that's happening in the Kansas City area. I also am a facilitator with the Pachamama Alliance, which is an international organization headquartered in San Francisco. And the mission of the Pachamama Alliance is to bring forth an environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, and socially just human presence on this planet. And so Project Drawdown is actually partnered with the Pachamama Alliance to bring their work to the public and make it widely accessible to those who are looking for a way to engage meaningfully around the issue of global warming. So the information that I'm going to be sharing with you this morning represents that partnership. And I also just want to say briefly, I typically present this information in a 2 to 3 hour workshop. So you guys are getting kind of a condensed version this morning. So hopefully it will still be of value to you. So as we get started, I do want to take just a brief moment to have us all get present to why we're here this morning talking about global warming, climate disruption. I invite you guys to think about the natural systems of the planet, all of the life, the diversity that forms this planet, our home. And the conversation that we're going to be having today really is in honor of all of that life of our home and that which we are working to save. All right, so I want to begin with a super brief look at the problem that we're experiencing right now. As we know, heat and light from the sun enters the Earth's atmosphere. Some of it's absorbed by the Earth. Some of it gets reflected back. Of the part that's reflected back, some of that then gets trapped in our atmosphere through the greenhouse gases and clouds there, right? We know this is the greenhouse effect, right? More comes in than we let back out. And so I give you this illustration mostly to point to the fact that we need, because of the, let me back up for a second. So the system, which is really critical to the livability and health of our planet, right? It's been knocked out of whack, out of balance, by the introduction of additional amounts of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere through human activity, right? And so as we look at the problem that we're facing, we need to address the problem in two fundamental ways. One is we need to reduce emissions, of course. And a lot of the conversations that we're hearing around global warming talk about the need to reduce emissions. We have to stop putting so many greenhouse gases in the atmosphere that are too much for a balanced system to be able to handle, right? But secondly, and perhaps even more important at this point, we have to, because there's too many greenhouse gases already in the atmosphere, we have to increase sequestration, which means we have to bring carbon out of the atmosphere and return it back to the Earth. And in a nutshell, we have to do both of these things at an unprecedented scale and rate in order to successfully address the problem that we're facing with global warming. All right, so I want to do just kind of a brief show of hands of those of you who are here today. How many of you sitting here in the room right now believe that this can be done, that we can actually achieve a reversal of the warming trend that we've created in the atmosphere? Okay, some. All right. Those of you who believe that we can do it, how many of you believe that we actually will do it, that humanity will step up to the plate and actually make this happen? Okay, a couple. All right. Okay. We'll see where we're at in our thinking about that when we get a little bit closer to the end. So, all right. Thank you. Okay. So if we start by acknowledging that the things that we're doing, the way that we're living, is impacting the atmosphere in a way that's leading to harmful and potentially catastrophic changes in our climate system, then I think a reasonable question for us to ask and what we all want to know is, well, what do we do? And I think many of us have been asking that question and taking action around that question with a sincere desire to make a difference. But until the work of Project Drawdown, I think what's been missing from that larger conversation is a clear statement of a goal of reversal and then a pathway to reach that. So when Paul Hawken and his team published the work of Drawdown in 2017, they titled it the most comprehensive plan ever proposed to reverse global warming. And they gave it that title, recognizing that it was a little cheeky, but they gave it that title to illustrate the point that it's the only plan that's ever been proposed to actually reverse global warming. There haven't been any plans that actually build a pathway to reversing global warming, even though we've known about this issue for quite some time. So for any of you who maybe aren't familiar with Paul Hawken, he's an author, and he's published a number of works, including four bestsellers. He's also an environmentalist and an entrepreneur, and he's really dedicated his life to kind of rethinking that relationship between business and the environment. So several years ago, he started asking the question, what would it take to actually reverse global warming? Can we do it? And then the answering of these questions became the work of Project Drawdown. So the goal of Project Drawdown was to determine whether it's possible to reverse global warming. And they did this by identifying, measuring, and modeling the solutions that were determined to be the most impactful, that either A, reduce the amount of emissions going up into the atmosphere, or B, remove the greenhouse gases through sequestration. And basically what Paul Hawken and a small group of others did as they were starting this project is they put a call out across the globe for researchers and scholars to join in the project. They recognized that they didn't have all the expertise that they needed on their own in order to do this. And many, many people answered that call. The Drawdown team consists of over 200 collaborators from over 20 countries. And they did the math. They modeled solutions that were already in play to see which ones would make the biggest difference, and then what would happen if those solutions were scaled at a rigorous but reasonable rate over a period of time. Okay, whoops. Okay, so as I get ready to share with you some of what the team discovered, I do want us to play a short video clip for you guys of Paul Hawken talking about the inception of Drawdown. I feel like his words kind of best set the stage for the rest of the information that I want to share with you today. So Dan, if you'll be so kind.
If you Google the top 10 solutions to climate change, top 20, 30, 40, 50, you name a number, but the top ones what you get of Proverbs. It's kind of like be kind to your mother, you know. Eat smart, consume less, be efficient, move closer to work, use power strips at home. I mean, things that are definitely sensible, make total sense, but also give you a sense that we're screwed. Because, you know, the enormity of the problem, the challenge that exists, it makes you feel sort of hopeless, actually. Most of the solutions in the world that are being proffered to people are about people's beliefs, whether they're from experts or they're from activists or they're from, you know, institutes or NGOs. It's just our beliefs about what we need to do. And like any good proverb, they're true, but they don't actually come together in a way that gives us a sense that cumulatively, together and with those solutions, we can actually reverse global warming. And the idea that we should aim for mitigation or reduction or stabilization is just crazy, because ppm right now of carbon dioxide, parts per million, is 402. Humans have never existed when it was over 300. So we're in terra nova. We're in a place right now that no human being of any sort of type, and certainly civilizational or not, has ever existed. So the science about what's going to happen, how fast it's going to happen, is actually speculative. It's good science, but it's speculative. And the idea that we should adapt, mitigate, reduce, at this point at 402, is to me absurd. If you're going the wrong way, you have to stop. You just can't slow down and say, now we're not going the wrong way. You still are going the wrong way. And that's why I say right now the proposals around addressing global warming are like Thelma and Louise in slow motion. We're just going right over the cliff, but we want to go slower. And that is not an inspirational goal for humankind. The only goal that makes sense for humanity is to reverse global warming, to stop, turn around, and go the other way. And I don't believe that you can achieve something if you don't name what it is you want to achieve. And naming the goal of reversal actually opens up possibility. There's this idea that somehow if we make our goals too big, you know, that it's too hard. It's the other way around. The bigger you make your goal, the more spaciousness there is in your mind, and creativity, imagination soars within a big goal and doesn't get very far when the goal is really tiny and minuscule. Drawdown is the point in time when greenhouse gases peak and begin to go down on a year-to-year basis. At least that's what it means in respect to climate. You can't achieve drawdown unless you bring carbon back home, because we're way past the point in the amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere that would lead to a stabilized planet, or stabilized weather systems. That's gone. So drawdown depends on bringing carbon back home. There's only one way we know how to do it, and it happens every year, and that is through photosynthesis. And if you look at NASA maps of carbon dioxide emissions span of a year, what you see is that every year, actually, we do draw down 6 to 7 ppm. So it goes up and it goes down, it goes up and it goes down. The problem is it doesn't go down to where it was before, and so there is a slow incremental increase of CO2 and greenhouse gases. So it's really about that equilibration, getting to that point where we bring back every year, over the course of a year, the same amount that we're emitting, and then bring back a little more, and that point starts out. And that is a very doable thing. And the way we face it, the way we looked at it, is as if it's, you know, almost an impossible task, you know, and it's just, it's the other way around. The solutions are surround us and around us all the time.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Okay, so as Paul Hawken mentioned in the video, drawdown is that point in time when the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere begins to decline on a year-to-year basis. And so this is the goal that really sets the context for the solutions that we're going to be looking at today. All right, and as we start to look at some of these solutions, I invite you to note that some of them are technological, as we might expect, but many of the solutions are also ecological and they're social. It's people, not technology, that are doing the work of implementing the solutions that are needed to actually achieve the goal of reversal. So as we dive in, so we're not going to get to all of these today, of course, but I'm going to go over a few with you, and then we're going to do a little activity where you'll have a chance to look at the full range of solutions. So let's jump in. All right. So solution number one on the list for the drawdown team was actually a bit of a surprise to them. It actually was refrigerant management. And when you think about it, we know that the chemicals used in refrigeration can have thousands of times greater impact in creating warming in the atmosphere. So even a small release of these chemicals can have a big impact, right? And so as you look at these slides as we go through the next several, you'll notice that the solutions are ranked in terms of their impact. And the impact that they have is reported based on the amount of carbon or carbon equivalents reduced or sequestered, and that's reported in gigatons. So to kind of wrap our heads around what that means, if you picture a blanket covering the entire United States, a little less than a half inch thick, that's about 1 gigaton of greenhouse gases. So the impacts of these solutions are reported in gigatons that are reduced or sequestered. This is one of the solutions that actually does carry a price tag. Most of the solutions identified by Project Drawdown generate financial savings, but capturing these chemicals at the point of disposal and either disposing of them or transforming them can be a little pricey. But I think the potential benefit tells us that it's worth spending that money. All right, another solution that was a bit of a surprise to the drawdown team is number three, reduced food waste. We waste a lot of food in this country, in our homes, as well as schools, businesses, restaurants, hospitals. And so the math of drawdown, looking at this solution, is based upon reducing that food waste by about half over a period of time. Again, can generate pretty significant reduction in emissions. Another food-based solution identified by the team is a plant-rich diet. Now, this doesn't mean eating a vegan or vegetarian diet, although some people make that choice. What they're really pointing to here is reducing the level of meat to consumption to a level that's actually considered healthy. The way that we tend to produce meat in this country industrially is very land, water, and energy intensive, and is a significant contributor to global warming. So, looking at solution number three, reducing food waste, and number four, those are two of the easiest things we can do as individuals to make a difference, but it's not enough to stop there. We also want to be rethinking our food system. You'll see as we go through, there are more food-based solutions. So looking at our food system from production all the way through to consumption is going to be a critical part of achieving the goal of reversal. All right, another solution that was a bit of a surprise to the team was number six, which is educating girls. We know that when girls receive education, they're less likely to marry early or against their will. We also know that women who receive more education tend to have fewer and more healthy children. And so looking at this solution, number six, which is educating girls, combined with solution number seven, which is actually family planning, when you put those two together, you actually get the number one solution to reversing global warming. And the impacts of that solution really are based upon the impacts on population. All right, we would expect that renewable energy will have a role to play in reversing global warming, and indeed it does. Onshore wind, as we go through these next few slides, I just invite you to note the financial savings that are generated by transitioning to renewables versus fossil fuel energy production. But onshore wind makes the list, as does offshore wind. Solar farms, rooftop solar, concentrated solar, those are all solutions that made the list, as well as geothermal. And I think that in our conversations about global warming so far, again, we focused a lot on renewable energy, and I think we can acknowledge that we've had some success here locally as well as across the country in having more of our energy generated through renewable means. All right. Again, thinking about our food system, regenerative agriculture makes the list at number 11. And as we talk about food-based solutions, I think it's important for us to note that, again, since we need to be addressing this problem from both angles, reducing the emissions as well as sequestration, many of our food solutions do that. They address both sides of that problem, so to speak. And so transitioning from industrialized commercial kinds of farming to regenerative agricultural practices can have a big role to play in reversing global warming. And we're lucky, I think, here in the Kansas City area that we have some folks really dedicated to expanding this work. All right, other solutions that sequester carbon. Of course, we want to be protecting our forests. One of the numbers to look at here is that number down at the bottom. When we look at the amount of carbon that's currently sequestered in our protected forests, of course, we want to keep that in the ground, right? But we also want to increase that number through afforestation or creating projects where we're creating new forest and new green areas that have the ability to sequester carbon. All right. Indigenous peoples' land management makes the list. And I think it's worth noting, when the IPCC report came out last year, the authors of that report acknowledged very directly that indigenous knowledge and wisdom are critical in addressing climate change, climate disruption. And I think that for us as individuals looking at this problem, it's not only important for us to gain an understanding of the practices that lead to better land management, but that we also look at the differences in worldview that lead to differences in behavior. I think it's no coincidence that 80% of the planet's biodiversity is found in lands that are managed by indigenous peoples. I think it makes sense to us to not only pay attention to and try to co-opt, so to speak, but to actually get genuinely interested in a worldview that has led to successful managing of land for a very, very long time. All right, telepresence is another solution that makes the list. As our technology gets more and more sophisticated, our options of communicating remotely continue to increase. A big part of the benefit of this solution is in the reduction of business travel, which is often airline travel, which of course has an impact on global warming. And then bioplastics also makes the list. We have to rethink the things we make, as well as the things that we do, right, when we're looking at solutions. So again, as I mentioned, we're not gonna have time to go through them all today, but we are gonna just take a quick look at the top 20 solutions that were identified by Project Drawdown. And you can see, again, I just want to make the point, it's not just about renewable energy. There's a variety of sectors that are represented here, from materials to food to land use. Women and girls, of course, is in there, as well as energy. And so as we look at the top 20 list, we can make a note that energy generation is 5 of the top 20 solutions. So we know that that's important. But as I mentioned earlier, food is very important as well. Food is 8 of the top 20 solutions. So again, getting involved individually as well as in our communities around rethinking how we grow, raise, produce, transport, and consume our food has a big role to play. Okay, so in a nutshell, this is Drawdown. They identified and measured 80 solutions that were determined to be the most impactful. There are also, for those of you who have the book or have looked through, there's also 20 coming attractions, which are other solutions that were newer, so there wasn't enough data to actually measure them yet, but they're included in the book for us to take a look at. But they measured 80 solutions, and the 80 solutions scaled over time have the ability to reduce 1,442 gigatons of carbon and carbon equivalents. And that's at a very, very middle-of-the-road rate of scaling up these solutions. So we know that this can happen even faster if we really get on it, right? And so net savings generated $51 trillion, and these are global numbers. And so this is Drawdown. This is basically that point in time when the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere begins to decline on a year-to-year basis. Okay, so you might not be able to see all of the words around here, but basically this is the top 80 solutions represented as a pie chart. And I think it's worth noting as we look at this that, again, there's no one magic solution. There's no silver bullet. There's no one thing that's going to save us from global warming, right? We need all of these solutions. We need to implement all of them. That's what the math tells us, that all of these are needed to actually make that change. Another thing to note as we look here is that these are things that we're already doing. These solutions are already in play. That's why they were able to be measured. And that tells us that we actually do know what to do and that we're doing it. And so our job is to actually scale up the implementation of these solutions to the level that's needed to actually achieve the goal of reversal. So for me, that's some good news amongst the often very bad news, but we actually do know what to do. So our job is to do more of it. Let's see. Another thing to take note of as we look at these solutions is that With very few exceptions, when we look at the solutions that were identified by Drawdown as being the most impactful, we can consider them no-regret solutions, which means they have so many advantages we would want to be doing them anyway, regardless of their impact on global warming. So advantages like saving money, creating jobs, improving human health, having more productivity in our food, more nutritious food, solving for social problems like hunger and poverty, having healthier, more diverse ecosystems. So those are things that I think are on our radar anyway. And so the messages of Drawdown, I think what we want to really hear and what we want to really pay attention to is that the solutions that have been shown to make the biggest difference for this problem that we're facing also offer us a world that's cleaner, healthier, has more beautiful neighborhoods, and involves people coming together in community to solve some of those chronic social problems. Okay, so I do want to give you guys a few minutes. You guys should have gotten a handout when you came in that looks like this. If anybody doesn't have one of these, George in the back will be happy to get you one. Just raise your hand and he'll bring one to you if you need one. So this list has the full 80 solutions that were identified by Project Drawdown, as well as the 20 coming attractions. So I know many of you in this room are probably already engaged with some of these solutions. So I invite you to, as you look through the list, make a note of any that you're already engaged with and that you can maybe scale up. And also take a look at any that are kind of intriguing to you or interesting or you feel might make a big difference in your community. And I want to give you guys, where are we at time-wise? 5 to 8 minutes or so. We're not going to take a long time, but I want to give you guys a few minutes to kind of look through the solutions as we get ready to talk about the next section. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring everybody back together. I know that wasn't a long time to look through the list, but take these with you. You're, of course, welcome to continue looking. I just wanted to give you at least a little bit of an opportunity to start to see the variety of the solutions that were identified by Project Drawdown as being very impactful. So now I want to kind of wrap up by talking a little bit about getting into action. So Project Drawdown provides a roadmap, so to speak, of some of the solutions that we know can make a significant difference when we're looking at reversing global warming. But it's not enough to just talk about what we need to do, right? We have to dig in and actually make it happen. And this is where the work of Project Drawdown and reversing global warming gets real for us. It's happening in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our communities. When we think about getting into action, I think it's worth noting that we've been given some pretty consistent messages in terms of what we can do. We've been told things like we can change our light bulbs, we can drive less, we can eat less meat, we can compost, we can recycle. In other words, individual things that we can do to make a difference. And I think most of us have a sense that that's really great and we want to be doing that, and it's utterly insufficient when compared against the enormity of the tasks that we need to accomplish, right? Or we're told that we can contact our legislators and demand changes in policy, right? But I want to talk for a minute about what I believe is the power of community-level action today. So when we think about the four levels of action, many of us do tend to start at that level of individual action. We make changes in our home, and then we can expand upon that by inviting our family and our friends to join us and making some of those changes. But when we hit the level of community, that's where we really start to see some traction in terms of the adoption and implementation of solutions at a level that becomes really meaningful. And so what this looks like in reality is connecting with your local schools, businesses, restaurants, hospitals, utility companies, and forming partnerships with them and supporting them in making the kind of changes that are needed. One thing that I found as I've been doing this work over the last few years is that as I'm talking with my legislators or I'm talking about different people throughout the community, there are a lot of people who truly have a sincere desire to do something. They just don't know what to do, including our legislators, right? And so bringing this information to them, providing a pathway for them to see, oh, okay, here's a really concrete action that I can take, let's join together and make that happen, can be very compelling. Let's see, let me look, I know there's something I'm gonna forget here. Okay. The other thing that I wanna just note as we think about community level action is I think going back to that message that we've received about contacting our legislators, I think part of what I would like to leave you guys with is we don't need to wait for anyone in Washington, D.C. to decide to pass legislation or not calling for change, right? Do we need some legislation? Yes. Do we need international cooperation even? Yes. But if we're waiting for that while we're ignoring the opportunities that are right under our noses to make very significant, very meaningful changes right here in our community, then I think we're selling ourselves and the planet short. So, again, when we think about that community level action, we want to think about the places in our community where we already have some partnerships. I think so often this kind of work addresses the kind of partnerships that we've really been losing over the last couple generations. Knowing who our local farmers are, knowing who our school board members are, knowing our utility companies, knowing our local business owners. We've kind of gotten away from those kind of relationships in many areas. And so I think reestablishing those connections can be very powerful when we're looking at joining together in community to make really meaningful change. All right, okay. Another thing I kind of want to leave you with is we're looking at building these connections, forming these relationships. It's important for us to note that people will act, they really will act when they can see a pathway for that action, when they can see themselves in the solution, and when they believe it will make a better world. We don't all have to agree upon whether global warming's happening exactly the way that we think it is or for the reasons that we think it is. There are so many reasons for us to come together at community level action anyway. And I think we find that we have many things in common when we start having conversations about our communities and what's needed to make them healthier and safer and more sustainable. All right, so I want to wrap up this section with one of my favorite quotes from the book. You heard Paul Hawken mention earlier in the video that, you know, our imagination and creativity really soar when we have a big goal in front of us. And so he says, we see global warming not as an inevitability, but as an invitation to build, innovate, and affect change, a pathway that awakens creativity, compassion, and genius. And I think that the messages of Drawdown give us the opportunity to look at the fact that we actually are being given an opportunity right now through global warming. We might not like the way the opportunity is coming to us, but we have an opportunity to really rethink the way that we're living, the way we're working, the way we play, and the way we relate to one another. And so I believe that, going back to that question at the beginning, I believe that we actually can do this. I believe that we actually will do this because I know that there are many, many people out there working their tails off right now to make this happen, implementing solutions, creating new technologies, generating new ideas and new partnerships. And so our job is to do everything we can to support that and then to make it real at the level of our communities. And I think that's where we then will start to see that community level action. It's visible. People can see it, and then it begets more action. And then that becomes meaningful even for our legislators going on up the ladder, so to speak. So that's my invitation, is to look at the opportunity that we're being given and see how you want to kind of connect with that. Okay? All right. So for those of you, like I said, this was a very brief introduction this morning. For those of you who are either interested in more information or want to kind of dig in a little bit deeper, there are some other opportunities I'm going to tell you about here. So there's Leanne. There she raised her hand. Leanne has a sign-up sheet at the table outside, I think, for the workshop that's happening on February 9th at Village Presbyterian. That's a 3-hour workshop. I'm one of the facilitators of that workshop. So for any of you who are interested in digging a lot more deeply into some of this information, you're welcome to attend. It's free and open to the public. So sign up for that if you'd like to receive information directly from me, or I know there are many emails out there kind of announcing the event. So you're welcome to join that. One of the things that we offer as a follow-up to anyone who's attended one of these introductions is a Drawdown Solutions workshop series, Getting Into Action. And it's a 4-series workshop, and people have the opportunity to, A, learn a lot more about the solutions, the research, what they tell us about how to be implemented, and then also have the opportunity to create a project in your community with support from other people who are interested in the same area that you're interested in and can give you some more skills to go out and build those partnerships and actually make that happen in your community. So it's been wonderful to see people come together in these workshops and just be on fire about the changes that they're creating in their communities. Gave you the website there for the Climate Council of Greater Kansas City. As I mentioned, we're a relatively new organization. We are up and running. We do have a website. It's still, things will still be added, but one of the things that we want to offer to the community is a collective calendar of all of the climate or environmentally related work going on in the area. You can go to our website to request workshops about drawdown, as well as other topics, and we just want to be a resource for people in the area who are interested in doing climate-related work. Also gave you the website for drawdown. And then some of the people who have gone through the workshop series that we've offered have started a Facebook group, Johnson County Drawdown. And I know there's, what's the one, what's, what, you guys just changed your name in Kansas City, right?
It's the Kansas City Drawdown Society.
Kansas City Drawdown Society. Okay, another Facebook group. So feel free to engage, to get involved at those levels as well. Part of what we want to do, a big part of what we want to do, is really support people, again, is bringing these actions to their community and making that work really real. Okay?
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Emily. That was great. And also, if you would like to be on our email list for the forum every week, I think on Wednesdays, Renee here sends out a notice with the details of next week's forum. So raise your hand if you'd want one of the, all you have to do is put your name and email address on this little green card. So if you'll raise your hand, Renee will hand one to you. We're now going to have questions and answers. And remember, everybody gets one question until everybody has a chance. No speeches. Emily is going to be in the library afterwards for further discussion, and there you can make all the speeches you want. Okay, so we'll now have questions and answers.
We certainly appreciate your being here. I just need some clarity on the four-series workshop. Now, are you saying that it is a four-session series? So if you come to one, you're theoretically to attend all four.
Yes,
is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, thank you.
And I understand then the project. Thank you.
Yes, yeah, the workshops build upon one another, and so that's where you'll have the opportunity to really create your project and get it into action. So thank you.
Hi. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, all right. I have public assistance. I live on public assistance. It includes housing. And, you know, when you have a, and it's just true, people who don't have much of an income, they feel disenfranchised by a lot of different things. But on this subject, they do too. So I'm just going to say really quick, our building and several buildings around town are managed by YARCO. YARCO is a combination of Presbyterian, Methodist, and Catholic. But anyway, so I live in this building. It's 11 stories. Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, they pick up everybody's trash, and there's a mountain of trash every day of the week. I've talked to people in that building, okay? And I don't know if you would go through YARCO or HUD, maybe not this administration, but that they, if they, 3 days a week, they could put out a bin on every floor. I know some people said they actually would do it, and I think some people there, if they thought about it and had a little education, they would. So that's a federal thing. It's also another education thing is I live in a building that all utilities paid, and people's like, oh, they'll crank it up. It's all utilities paid. It's not my dollar. So that's another education I think that needs to go through public.
Yeah.
Oh, can – okay. All right. I was going to talk about junk food too. But anyway, can – what would you say is the facilitation? Should we go through – should I go through YARCO first and then see if they can implement anything in that building and other buildings? Or, I mean, who's the person I should go to first? I'm sorry to take up some.
No, that's great. And I think that a lot of us have that question, like, where do I start? And I think for each situation, it's going to be a little bit different. I think the first step really is to find who are the other people who are willing to partner with you, whether that's somebody in just another resident in the apartment complex with you, or whether it's somebody related in the management. It's finding those one to two people who are willing to partner with you. Once we hit that number of three, something magical seems to kind of happen. Like we feel so much more empowered to make things happen. So find the people who are willing to partner with you, whoever those people are, and then that's going to be your first step. And then, of course, you want to keep talking with the people who have the power to make the biggest change. But I think we also, you kind of want to hit it from both sides. And that's where having more people involved will be really helpful. Have people who are willing to talk to the other residents as well as the management. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about sprawl. Okay. There seems to be a continuing trend towards moving farther and farther distances from the central part of the city. Kansas City, Missouri has actually done some work to counteract this and to try to get people to remain within the closer in areas where we already have utilities and all that. But nevertheless, there doesn't seem to be a public perception of the dangers of having people so far out, having to destroy agricultural lands, having to be transported great distances. Do you see any knowledgeability or understanding on the part of some of these cities other than KCMO that this is not necessarily a good thing and a willingness to arrest it?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And first, let me say I'm not an expert in city planning, but part of my experience has been in talking with people, to address your question directly, is that, again, a lot of our legislators, a lot of the people who are making these kinds of decisions, they don't get it. They know in many instances less than we do about the impacts and what's happening. And so when we look at, you know, as I'm reading articles and things coming out from some of the experts in terms of like what we need to do, so much of what we need to do is have conversations with people, have the issue of global warming and the things that need to happen be part of our daily conversations. I often find people saying to me, people who go through the workshop for particular, they're learning so much and they're like, but my neighbor knows nothing. I'm like, that's right. That's our job, is to go out and have conversations with people about these very issues. Again, find those people who are in a position to impact whatever area it is that you want to look at. There are those people there who are interested and who will talk with you about what needs to happen, and then let them do a big part of that work. So, for example, in December, we held a workshop for elected officials on both sides of the state line. And basically, we had Mayor Kelly in Roland Park and Councilwoman Lindsay Constance in Shawnee. We let them do all of the inviting, and we ended up with over 130 people attending this workshop, primarily legislators and city officials who were in a position to actually make some changes. Many of them had no idea what to do before they came to the workshop. So, again, I think finding those few people who are partner with you, who are in a position to do something, and then providing education, having conversations, offering to support the work that they're doing and that they're interested in expanding, can make a big difference. Because I think you're right, I think a lot of people aren't making all of the connections about the actions that we're engaging in and the impact on the planet.
I guess I was a little surprised to see refrigeration as the number one, you know, opportunity. Can you speak a little bit more to that? I was assuming that you meant air conditioning, but you may also be talking about home refrigeration, the refrigerator. Could you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so basically that solution is looking at all of the refrigerants that we use. You know, we used to basically the hydrofluorocarbons that have been, that replaced the old CFCs, right, that were destroying the ozone. They have, the warming potential is significantly greater than that of carbon to impact the atmosphere. So basically, the protocol that called for the phasing out of the old refrigerants has been updated to actually start calling for the phasing out of the new refrigerants, because we know that the damage that they're creating is significant in terms of warming. So basically, this is anywhere that you're going to encounter refrigerants. So whether it's refrigerators, cooling systems, all of that. And basically, again, it's looking at funding and really monitoring. There are laws in place, there are regulations that these refrigerants are supposed to be captured and disposed of properly. But part of the solution looks at really making sure that that's happening like it needs to. And then as this new wave of refrigerants is being phased out, making sure that we're capturing that at the point of disposal and disposing of it properly or transforming it. So it's the whole range of that whole classification. Yeah.
Hi, so I recently heard on NPR that they are really upping the standards for marine fuel as far as ships because of how dirty and how much of the emissions that they cause. I saw that shipping was one of the solutions. How much do you think that is going to impact? Because it sounded like it's such a huge drain as far as because so much things are coming by ship.
So that's one I was telling Craig earlier. I feel like I'm trying to become a technical expert in all of these different solutions, right? And it's not my background. I can't speak to that very well. Is there anybody else in the room who knows a lot about that, that can share? That's one I'm going to have to do a little bit more research on in terms of like what the predicted impact is in making some of those changes. I think overall, though, what we want to look at is rethinking the entire process, how we're living, how we're working, how we're playing. I think we're in the mindset of we want to keep living the way that we're living, but we don't want the impacts of the way that we're living. And I think we've hit a point where we can no longer pretend that that's how the world works. And so I think part of what we're going to see is a revamping of the entire process. So I will do some research. You're welcome to email me, and I will find that out for you. Okay? All right, go ahead.
Thank you for what you're doing. Appreciate sure. it. Part of my depression when I deal with this subject is I don't feel like the federal government is helping us solve this problem, which to me, this is going to take the federal government. Me recycling is fine, but won't this take the federal government to deal with this? And we have one political party that denies it's a problem in the first place. Can you help me with my depression here?
We'll see. I think, again, would it be lovely if we had legislators who tomorrow would wake up and be like, man, we got to get on this. Let's make this happen. And we did it, right? We don't have that right now. But for me, that's where I go back to, we don't need to wait. That's going to happen at some point. It's not happening right now. We don't need to wait for it. If we start changing things in our communities, that's where the work's going to happen anyway. Because what's going to happen? Our federal legislators start passing some new laws, making regulations. Where's that going to happen? It's going to happen in our communities. We don't have to wait for the law to tell us what to do. We actually know what to do, and there are a lot of people out there already doing it. So we can start from the process this way, kind of work our way up. As we're making these changes in our community, our legislators will have to follow us because we're already doing the work. And so I think I totally understand the, for me at times, the it wants to be overwhelmingly despairing to me to be like, wow, so many people are not engaged in this issue. But then I turn around and I look at all the people who are engaged in this issue, and what's missing is a pathway. What's missing is knowing what to do. When our legislators got together and didn't know what to do, they discovered what to do. They're still meeting. They're taking action. And I think that we have to, that's where we need to meet one another, is let's be in community with one another, let's be in conversation with one another, let's talk about what do we need to do here to make our community safer, healthier, more sustainable, and then that's where right now, that's where the action's going to happen, and I think the rest is going to, it's going to come at some point because it's undeniable at this point, even though it's still being denied in certain areas, right? But for the most part, that's a small number of people that are, when you look at the data, it's a small number of people. And so if the rest of us stop waiting for those few people to change their minds, what can we accomplish? I think we can accomplish quite a lot. I don't know if that helped.
Okay, thanks so much, Emily. Yeah.
Thank you.
In appreciation of your hard work on this, we're going to give you our U.S. Union-made coffee mug.
Thank you. That's gorgeous. Yeah. Thank you.
Next week's forum is going to be Race on the East Side, which would be really interesting. Our Walt Wells will be involved in that, who's also a member of our committee. So be sure and come next Sunday. And also, you are invited to the 11:15 service. And Emily will be available in the library, and you can ask additional questions, and we can have more discussion. So thanks for coming to the forum.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, Introduction to Drawdown with Emily Leibla. This program was recorded on Sunday, January 27th, at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within one day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.